Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Searstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, it's Tuesday.
I know.
Woo-hoo. The month is almost over. It's incredible how fast this month has gone by. And it's been an interesting month, certainly in the markets and in the metals. Today we have gold, it's off its high of 1324 on the day, settling in about 1320 on the New York spot price. Silver was up 4 cents today at 2103. Platinum up 12 at 1473. And palladium at 6. At $831. The USDX today is trading slightly higher, 0.05 at 80.32, along with crude oil. Crude oil broke down to the 105 level, 105.96, which, kind of makes you wonder. Here you have the rebels who finally get a hold of the refinery in northern Iraq, and oil drops. So, I guess that's a good sign, Al, huh? The rebels got a hold of it?
I don't know. If that's a good sign, then maybe there's other things the rebels need to get hold of.
I guess. Perhaps.
Let's vote for the rebels. We need more rebels around here to seize control of properties, and then prices will fall rather than rise.
And the Dow today was down about 120 points at 16,818, along with the NASDAQ. Everything was in the red today, down 18 at 4,350. The S&P down 12 at 1,949. 10-year yield, 2.59%, down 0.04. So a little more activity in the market today. Not much more, but a little bit more. And, I came across this report and about, we talk about all this political turmoil. We talk about everything is just be happy, don't worry. And some of the signs, and, of course, I believe this is certainly the calm before the storm. And some experts have warned that the calm often precedes a storm, and I think this is what we're seeing. Some of the signs of tranquility is the little trading. So far this year, investors have traded an average of 3.4 billion shares each day on the New York Stock Exchange. That's 38% less than they did in the same period 4 years ago. You have small price moves. Well, we mentioned this last week on the S&P 500 on the index. It has risen or fallen less than 1% for 46 days in a row. And that is very rare. Stocks haven't moved so little for so long since 1995. And when we talk about calm, the VIX index, which tracks the expected price swings in the S&P 500, suggests things could remain a little bit quiet for a little bit longer. The fear index by traders, that's been hovering around 11%, or I should say been hovering around 11% recently, about half its 10-year average. Last week it dropped to 10.6, and that is the lowest since 2007. And one more, Al, no corrections. You have the professional stock investors say it's healthy for a bull market to occasionally have a correction, a drop of 10% or so. The S&P hasn't had one for nearly 3 years, and that's twice as long as the average back to World War II.
To what extent do you suppose that this, I don't know, there's a lack of volatility. There's less volatility than they might otherwise expect, and particularly compared to 4 years ago. To what extent do you suppose that reflects the pressure that's been put on flash trading? You know, the computers were making the markets volatile with the enormous trades that were moving just a fraction of a cent up or down at any given moment. And it certainly contributed to volatility. There's been a lot of pressure put on to pressure, political and legal pressure against the flash trading. Does that explain it?
Well, I don't think the flash, I'm not sure with, but flash trade, I don't think you need to have big swings with that type of a trading. I mean, you can have, because you're dealing.
No, it's not a big screen.
No, so
not
you're,
big,
you're
not
dealing.
Necessarily, but they would ride momentum.
Well, yeah, but you still have. Yeah, but you still have small moves, and I think perhaps this is could be a reason why we're seeing some of this so much calm, perhaps, because when you're dealing with billions and billions of dollars, you only need something to move a few cents, and well, that's all they need to do to make it move. But I think what we're seeing is, you know, the small price moves. I mean, we've been making these record highs with, you know, a half of a point or, you know, 1 point. So, I mean, they're not strong highs. And you certainly, the little trading, when you look at 38% less than when the same period 4 years ago. And yes, and this is all with the fact that the markets are rigged and so forth. I get that. But yet I believe these are some signals that sort of it's like the market is not good. And these are some of the signs that are telling folks, be careful if you're in there. I mean, if you have your retirement plans, you have your pension funds, you have your IRAs in paper, you can roll those IRAs into gold and silver. So give us a call if you want to do that in your 401ks. Be careful because I believe the market is about ready to break.
I've got an article here that was on the Daily Ticker earlier today, a couple hours ago, and also published at Yahoo Finance. And the headline is, "The Market is Rigged, and Here's How Individuals Can Play It." Financial analyst Heidi Moore said, "Once you wake up to how screwed up the stock market really is, the financial industry knows you're likely to get very nervous and take your money out. It's time to break down the polite fiction that investing in the stock market is something that sane, rational, sensible people do. It's a high-risk, contact sport for your money. If you know that, you're ahead of the game." Moore continues telling the Daily Ticker that high-frequency trading, the subject of Michael Lewis's best-selling book, Flash Boys, distorts the market and increases the volatility of stocks. High-frequency trading pits the retail investor against the supercharged computers, a lose-lose situation for everyone but the traders that own and operate these machines. "Regular investors should not believe the market is a store of value," she explains. "It's not a bank. It can bring you great returns, If you're in something like an index fund, just don't trade stocks day by day. Well, I heard her. This is a written synopsis of what she said, but part of what she said also included that 73% of the American people don't invest in the stock market. And I didn't catch what the number had been, but 10 years ago, far more people were engaged in the stock market, and they have moved out since then because they recognize that it's rigged. It's a fixed game. It's like playing roulette where you know the house has rigged the game where you aren't going to win. And therefore, people are waking up to that fact, and they are withdrawing, and this may contribute to the price stability that you're talking about, that there hasn't moved up that much, hasn't moved down much. We got fewer people playing the game. Maybe that's part of the explanation. In any case, what's impressive to me is here are mainstream financial news outlets, that would be the Daily Ticker and Yahoo Finance, that are publishing an article with the headline, "The Market is Rigged." All right? And here's how individuals can play it. Well, you know, if you're going to play a rigged market, you're crazy. I don't care what they say.
Well, it's nice to know that Yahoo finally agrees with us after we've been saying it for 20 years.
But, you know, it's the sort of thing that it's evidence that recognition of the problem is growing, it's becoming mainstream, and that inevitably means it's going to have to end, or at least be dramatically reduced. I don't think you'll ever get to a point where the market is not being, somebody's not trying to rig the market and take advantage of it. Just like you'll never see a time when somebody's not trying to fix horse races. You can put up a bunch of defenses and protections and, you know, to avoid the horses being fixed, but if there's money to be made, somebody's got an angle on how to do it illegally. That's just the nature of our species, or at least a percentage of our species. But how much? Do we have a lot of rigging, or do we tolerate only a very little rigging? How much rigging are we going to have in our markets, in our horse races, in whatever? And we're seeing that the rigging is driving, the implication is that market rigging and high-frequency trading, flash trades, are moving people out of the markets. So who's going to be left, Melody?
Well, it makes you wonder if they're moving because of that, because I really don't think the majority of people, I don't think people really get it. I mean, they're tied to the markets mainly because of their retirements and so forth. But or are they moving because they just don't have the disposable income? And so.
Well, that's going to be part of it, too. I mean, those, you know, there's more than one cause. There's not a single cause.
Well, of course.
There's a constellation of causes, and some are significant, and some are minor. You know? So.
But, it's just common. You know, it kind of reminds me, I remember as a child, and you would talk about a crooked politician. And, you know, it was always, we know he's crooked and so forth, but it was always a hush-hush. You didn't talk politics and you didn't talk religion. Now it's widely accepted that, you know, most politicians are crooked. Everybody knows it. Everybody talks about it. Everybody agrees and, you know, everybody lives their daily lives. The markets are the same way. Years ago, you talked about inside trading, how the markets are rigged, and it was all a quiet shush-shush. Here it is now. Everybody, you have, you know, articles written about the rigged market. Books are being produced. Lawsuits are being enacted because of inside trading and so forth. And it's even acceptable that inside trading is, you know, 25% of all trades is all in, on the M&As is inside trading. So what? Where's the SEC? Where's anybody to make anybody accountable?
Yeah.
For the corruption, nowhere. You slap a few fines on people, and you know they will not admit to any wrongdoing. Of course not. I made billions off of the deal. Here's a couple million for you. Now go bother somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way of the world anymore. And to me, I believe that is an indication of how close we are to the
end. An economic collapse. Mm-hmm. And it's not, if we do have, if something like an economic collapse takes place, It won't be because the quantity of money is too great or too little. It won't be because interest rates are too high or too low. And it won't be because the economic indicators we're familiar with. In the end, what will really cause the economic collapse was the character of the people in the nation. And insofar as we become an increasingly immoral or amoral people, we are certainly approaching more. We're getting nearer and nearer to that economic collapse. The economic collapse will reflect the more fundamental moral collapse. And we talked about this a little bit last week. We were listing, talking about a number of evidence, a number of evidences that the nation had become increasingly immoral over the last, since 2000, if I recall, if I recall the article correctly. And, you go through one after another and you say, yeah, you don't notice it. We take it for granted that we can do things that are immoral or amoral. Everybody's doing it. Why not me? And inevitably, it will destroy this system. Why? Because this system is based on credit, right, and debt, not real assets. Insofar as we succumb to the temptation of liar's loans, right, a concept that was made popular back prior to the Great Recession in 2007, 2008, nearly 2000s, we had liar loans. They'd lend money, go on in, lie. Tell me you made $100,000 a year. They aren't going to check. That was one of the reasons that triggered the housing collapse, which triggered the Great Recession. We had liar's loans, and people don't get it. If they only see this as a function of mathematics and economics, they're not understanding. We had the collapse because we relied on liars. And we have a system that says, sure, it doesn't matter if they tell the truth or they lie. We don't care. And the important thing is we do some business. And in the end, that attitude is self-destructive. So, if you want to go do something to prevent the Great Recession from becoming a Great Depression or a Greater Depression, one of the things you have to do is start to restore some moral foundation to this country. And that's easily said, and it's going to be almost impossible to do. It'll probably only be restored after, in the context of a real collapse where people are bloodied so badly that all of a sudden they say, oh my gosh, I think I better start praying. I think I better get moral. I think I better get righteous. I better do the right thing. Because they're going to learn that it'll be the only thing that works. The lies won't work anymore. In the midst of great poverty, the only thing that's going to work is a very profound kind of truth. And lies will fail, and perhaps we will become a more moral people. And if we do, then we will slowly work our way out of the moral collapse that will be evidenced by an economic collapse.
Today, headlines, feel-good titles to all these stories. Home prices jumped nearly 11% in April. Ooh, sounds good now, right? And are now up more than 22% from the bottom 3 years ago. However, the big print is the real good, feel-good news, don't worry, be happy. Then they, just like an attorney, or any contract, I should say, what they give it to you and the small print taketh away. But we're still 18% below the peak that was set in 2006 of July. Price gains on homes are slowing. And although you did have some home prices rise in April, the annual gains actually weakened. Last year, some of the Sunbelt cities were seeing year-over-year numbers close to 30%. Now are all below 20%. So, of course, we had low mortgage rates, and you begin to see those start moving up. Of course, that's going to put a damper on the housing market. And a lot of these home sales are being supported by all cash buys and low supply, and you don't have any first-time buyers into the market. And we know that the U.S. home construction, the pace of U.S. home construction slipped in May. And a lot of these builders, a lot of these of the construction is not so much on single-family homes, but a lot of the construction is apartments. So, again, another sign that people in the future will be renting and not buying.
Or sleeping under a bridge.
Sleeping under the bridge.
Then you don't have to pay any rent at all. You know, look on the bright side, being homeless, no rent, no utilities. I'm Alfred Addis to see this Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, give Melody a call. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners to make sure they join or check out our website, DGScoins.com, DGScoins, Discount Gold Silver Coins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, our programs are archived there on a daily and monthly basis. We got some great prices here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. $20 gold pieces, they're only running slightly over $100 over a bullion coin, but the premiums are beginning to rise significantly. So we had a nice pop in the $20 gold pieces. We have some Mint State 62 $20 Liberty gold pieces. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
You know, when we were talking to Greg Hunter yesterday, one of the remarks he made during the course of the interview was that that ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, that they claim they have about 15,000 warriors. The high probability is that they're lying. If they claim 15,000, they probably only have 10,000. They might even have less than that. And there's a big implication here. It goes to show how few people it really takes to affect geopolitics in this world. Right? Even if they have the 15,000 that they claim, these 15,000 people are now in a position to shake the world. Now, that's something extraordinary, and it makes, you know, on the one hand, it's scary. On the other hand, it's encouraging because it indicates a handful of people in this country who are willing to fight, and I don't mean pick up arms per se, but willing to actually fight, not just complain, but fight. They can have a great effect on what's happening in our political system and our economic system. Relative handful of people could make an enormous difference if they were organized and willing to fight
involved.
For the same thing.
If they were involved.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're saying 15. They could also have 30,000.
No, they would be underestimating. They'll tell us at least the maximum number they have, because the more they have, the more important. If they wouldn't say there's only five of us. You know, they're not going to say there's only five of us. They're going to claim they're going to maximize the numbers to indicate their growing strength, just from a political perspective. So I don't think they'll have more than 15,000.
Political,
but they might have.
But what about as a military perspective?
Well, it's all politics. It's all about politics in the end. That's what it's about. They're going to win the hearts and minds, or perhaps the heads, if they chop them off of the people of Iraq.
Plus, you also don't know what governments are behind them either. So I think,
The United States is to some degree. We're providing them with arms. We've been providing them with arms in Syria.
I know that. It is interesting. The point is, you need to become involved. This is a major election coming up this year. Major.
And there's another point here also. The United States has, we talked to James Corbett last week. He pointed out that the United States has provided arms, at least, for what has become the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the warriors, these rebels, militants, whatever you want to call them. We've helped to fund them. We've helped to provide arms for them and perhaps training. Greg Hunter pretty much agreed with that yesterday in the interview. But at the same time, we have some apparent responsibility for supporting the Shiites that we helped to install in Iraq. So here we are playing both ends against the middle, and this goes to this notion about morality that I talked about in the first segment of the program. The government is seen cynically playing both ends against the middle in this matter. This is evidence of an immoral posture in our government and a set of immoral values. The truth of the matter is, we should be able to pick one side or the other if we're going to get involved in this and say, these are the good guys, we're fighting for the good guys. But we're not. We're playing both ends against the middle. Both are good guys, both are bad guys. Makes no difference to us. We don't have a moral issue. We don't have a moral position in this fight. We're just looking out for number one. And a lot of people sit back and say, well, that's politics. That's what geopolitics is all about. And that's true to some extent. But it's also evidence of a world, insofar as we accept that. It's evidence of a world that's become increasingly immoral or amoral. Never mind. Let the government fight them, fight for both sides. Get all three sides. It doesn't matter. You know, we'll help them all. We'll defeat them all. It's all the same to us. It belittles us. It doesn't belittle them. It belittles us. It degrades us as a nation to be immoral and amoral, or at least to be seen to be immoral and or amoral.
Detroit. Water. United Nations. There's this Curtis Garner says it's a possibility that the United Nations could soon help the Detroit Water and Sewerage Department provide service to struggling customers. She said that the reality is that nearly half of Detroit water and sewage customers can't pay their bills. And this has led activists to lobby the UN to step up and take action. Now, they don't say who these activists are. She says if they do contact us, we are willing to speak with them. We owe it to the customers that are paying to collect from those that aren't. Somebody has to pay for the water. And and this was according to the Free Press, the average Detroit water bill is now $75 a month. And some of these people even remotely suggest that the U.S. should not be involved in our affairs. And there was questions, people who wrote in and made comments. And I just can't believe the comments of some of these people, Al. I mean, it is to the general populace. And, I mean, it's like, oh, hey, if they want to pay, be my guest. Somebody's got to pay for it, so...
Which is evidence of people that just don't feel a sense of personal responsibility for paying their own bills. Now, that's not so unusual. There aren't many people listening who in their heart of hearts wouldn't be more than happy to let somebody else pay your rent, pay your car, put the gas in your automobile or change the oil and the rest of that. We're always looking for free lunch. It's part of human nature. But civilization and a society that becomes prosperous is ultimately based not on a bunch of opportunists who will take anything they can get anytime they can get it. It has to be based on an idea that people are personally responsible for paying their own bills. And if you want a society and you want a prosperous nation, as painful as it may be, you got to walk away from the idea that, hey, I want a free ride. Somebody pay my bills. You know, get somebody else to pay my bills. You have to walk away from that. If you don't, sooner or later, whoever is paying your bills is going to stop. And when they do, there you'll be. Without a job, without perhaps even knowing how to work, without industry around you, without businesses around you that might be able to employ you, and what are you going to do? How are you going to survive? You know, we're going to learn morality in this country. We're going back to a moral nation. Well, as we said earlier, we won't get there, you know, in an easy manner. There'll be a price to be paid. It'll be painful. No one will like it. And grudgingly, we're going to have to admit that there's no free lunch.
Well, I'd like to know who these activists are. They're going to the UN. They should be going to the local churches. They should be going to the local states, the city, little governments, and so forth, in order to help people to pay their bills, not the UN.
Do you think the UN would really do this?
Just the idea.
Now, I understand the idea is bizarre, but do you think the UN would really do this?
I don't know.
I don't think they would. For the reason is... if they're going to pay for the water bills of the people in a big city in the United States of America, which is perceived globally, theoretically, to be wealthy, all right, if the United States can't even support Detroit, why should the UN? And if the UN does support Detroit, what about Nairobi? How about supporting the house? About paying the water bill for the people in Nairobi or Uganda? Or
Detroit isn't Nairobi. Detroit,
I know,
is
that's
a broken...
my point.
Detroit is a broken city in the United States.
Yeah, but Nairobi is impoverished to begin with. It's only
somebody
to the United
had to
States.
Have some sort of encouragement to even process the idea of going there.
You know what happens then? I'll tell you what, Melody.
But Detroit
anybody
is
wants
looking...
to hire me to lobby to go to the UN, I can. You can. I'll need $100,000 a year, and I will become an activist to lobby for the UN to pay the water bills for Dallas, Texas.
I'm
so
looking at
you
Detroit.
You want to start a fund, Melody?
City.
Collect $100,000 for me. I'm prepared to lobby.
I am looking at Detroit as a city that is broken, that is being bought up by all these corporations and all these. I don't know. There's just something wrong with what's going on.
There's something wrong with
Detroit.
It. They're not going to pay their own bills. That's point one. Point
talk
two.
Talk about what's being
certain
done.
Certain amount of wishful thinking. Will someone please pay my bills? How about the UN? Michigan's not going to. Why doesn't Michigan pay Detroit's bills? That's not going to happen. Why doesn't the United States pay Detroit's bills? That's not going to happen. Insofar as they're even going to the UN, it's evidence of desperation. Where else are they going to go? How about they go to the Catholic Church or the Dalai Lama? I don't know. How far can you go with this before you finally realize, I don't think anybody's going to pay our bills. I think we're going to have to pay for our own water. What a world. You know, when you stop to think about it, when people won't even pay for their own water, you understand? We can live for a couple of minutes without oxygen. We can live only for a couple of days, maybe three, without water. We can live for a month. The average person can live for a month without food. Water, other than oxygen, water is the next most important thing in the world. And there are people who can't even pay for their water or don't want to pay for their water. Water. You run out of water and you die. You know, the whole thing becomes irrational.
Well, I think you missed my point a little bit, but let's move on to Putin. Do you really believe Putin is withdrawing his request?
Yeah, he says it. Just said it. I don't doubt it. An article from the Associated Press. Russian President Vladimir Putin had asked the head of Russia's upper house of parliament to cancel his March 1st request authorizing the use of force on Ukrainian territory. In other words, on March 1st, President Putin asked parliament, the Russian parliament, to enact a law that would authorize the use of force on Ukrainian territory back on March 1st. Since then, we've got April, May, and June. And now President Putin has said, wait a second, let's cancel that. All right, let's cancel that authorization for force. Russian parliament member Valery Shernakin said that the House would vote Wednesday on the issue. Putin is, of course, asking that they cancel his request for authorization to use military force in the Ukraine. He says, no, let's cancel that. Putin's announcement comes after pro-Russian rebels in eastern Ukraine said Monday they would respect a ceasefire declared by the Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, raising hopes for an end to months of fighting that have killed hundreds and driven thousands from their homes. So, is this likely? Is this evidence that the Ukrainian problem is cooling down? Putin doesn't, he says, I don't want authority to invade. If you take that authority away, then I can't invade. I can't even be blamed for not invading. So he's asking, get rid of that authority. Is this evidence that we're moving into a peaceful solution? Has the problem been pretty much resolved? What do you think, Melody? Or is it just giving people time to reload? You know, that's what people say, peace. That's how they define peace. The time when people and things calm down enough where you have an opportunity to reload your rifle. Is that what they're doing? Reloading, Melody, or will we see real peace in the Ukraine?
I think they're reloading. I don't think
reloading.
Putin...
Whether we'll see that doesn't. You could reload and still have peace. They're definitely reloading.
But I just find it. I can't imagine. Well, he doesn't come across as the type of man to cancel.
I know, but that's what he's doing. Well, that's what's reported. And I assume the reports are accurate. So,
I mean, Russia's doing fine. Their currency is, they're hitting some high numbers for the ruble. His comeback is very strong. The sanctions really didn't have any impact on him at all. It's break music.
Does that mean we have to take some commercials right now?
I guess we do.
All right, then I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We were talking about Russian President Vladimir Putin and how he had recently, just this week, requested that Parliament pass a law canceling a previous authorization from March 1st for him to engage in an invasion, use military force within Ukraine. Right, and people are sitting back and saying, oh, hooray, this may be conducive to peace and whatever. It may be that this problem is going to be resolved now, and that might be true. But during the break, Melody and I were talking about this, and it occurred to us that the motivating factor for Putin's announcement this week that, gee whiz, we don't wish to invade Ukraine, may have been that last week somebody blew up one of his pipelines. The problem with pipelines is they extend for hundreds or thousands of miles, and they can't be protected. They are extraordinarily vulnerable. There are sections of pipeline that aren't seen by people for, who knows, days or months on end. The only things that see them are deer and bear and so on. They're out in the wilderness, and there's no way to protect them. Putin had one of his pipelines blown up last week. It may have communicated a message to Mr. Putin that if you don't pull in your horns, we're going to blow up a couple more of your pipelines, and I don't know how many there are, but there aren't that many. Three or four bombs would be enough to terminate Mr. Putin's gas business, supplying gas to Europe and getting paid by Europe. He's having a problem being paid by the Ukraine. I understand that. But he is being paid by Europe for the gas he provides them. A couple of bombs could put him out of business for a month or more. A couple of bombs, right? That's not expensive. He could lose millions of dollars if someone is willing to detonate three, four bombs that might cost a few hundred dollars each. And even if they make the repairs on the pipelines, they bomb a pipeline, they repair it, they get it back in business, and it's running within a couple of weeks, fine. What's to prevent another bomb and then another one after that from tearing his pipelines apart? These pipelines are extraordinarily vulnerable, and they can be destroyed at a very low cost. And it may be that the destruction of the pipeline last week communicated a message to Mr. Putin that he, now that he thinks about it, he doesn't really want to invade Ukraine. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I'm sure all that had an impact. I don't believe Putin is a man that changes his idea, but I think he'll also change and make adjustments as this plays out. But
well, I'm sure he will, but I mean, this is, if you got to, let me see, do I want to invade Ukraine or do I want to lose a couple million dollars a month? Probably tens of millions. I don't know how much, I have no idea how much flows through those pipelines, but they're all vulnerable.
And, it's probably a B word. But,
a B word?
Billions, not millions. But,
yeah, it might be.
We've got Dave calling from Michigan.
Well, Dave.
Hey, Melody and Al, how are you?
Good.
You know, as soon as you mentioned Detroit, I go up in smoke. Just like the people in the Ukraine, they don't want to pay their gas bill. They're so used to communism getting stuff free that in Detroit for 40 years, they were used to, like the one lady said, well, we've been doing this for 40 years. Why change now? But they've got water pouring in the basements in Detroit from these abandoned homes because people are scrapping. They're scrapping beautiful homes. When they get done pulling the wiring and the plumbing out, all you can do is bulldoze them, you know, and eventually they become crack houses and then they get burned. But it's just the way the thing is being run. This guy Fecano from Wayne County, there's supposed to be a $250 million jail. Well, he's got $250 into it now, and it's only half done. So now Dan Gilbert from Quicken Loans says, well, I'll give you $50 million for the property. It looks bad with a jail next to the casinos here. Why don't we just move this out of here and start all over again? And they're just wasting money. Now they say in Michigan they need $1 billion for roads. Well, here's $250,000 just squandered. And they wonder where this money, you know, how much.
A quarter million or $250 million?
Well, they had $250 million being wasted on this jail, but they say they need $1 billion. For to fix the Michigan roads, and they don't know where the money's coming from. But just in this one instance, you see how money is being squandered. And
well,
so then
I think they
could
just raise a tax on the welfare recipients. But the welfare recipients, they're the only ones having money coming into the city. Let's put a tax on welfare.
This is the deal. Besides these people taking, going down and buying all these lotto tickets, because I've stood beside some little old ladies that I know didn't have much, and they're buying $50, $100 worth of lotto tickets, take their money that's allocated to them and pay their water bill like a little kid. You got to pull it out of their allowance because now they're trying to spread the cost over the suburbs. The DIA, Detroit Art Institute, was worth $350 million. The lady running it gets $350,000. Somehow they got the three counties that have an assessment on my home to pay for the Detroit Art Institute. Got one painting there that was offered $250 million for one painting, and they got a warehouse full of paintings, and they don't want to sell anything. So now they put this extra tax on the suburbs to pay for this failed institute down there. So then they've got the Wright Afro-American Museum. And the guy was saying, well, where are we going to get money for this? Because this is another failed thing. We got to get the suburbs to pay for this. And it's one thing after another. And it's Illich, who's started with Little Caesar's Pizza. They had Obama over to his house, and it was $10,000 to see him and $50,000 to shake his hand. I mean, this is the kind of money. He owes the city of Detroit $180 million in back taxes on the casino, but he says, I'll give $200 million for a new hockey arena, and everybody else pitches in $450. That means we, the taxpayers, for the $650 million hockey arena. And then he says, then I want the old arena, Joe Louis, knocked down at the expense of the state of Michigan. Well, here we go. Suburbs get hit again. Because we got to tear this down. You can't leave that up for kids to have hockey leagues and stuff. No, you got to come to his place. And this is how they kind of run this deal in Detroit. And it's really
business as usual. Try to find someone else. Try to find someone else to pay your bills. Come up with a great idea and get somebody else to pay for it, which goes back to this notion about morality and immorality that I was talking about earlier in the program. You've got somewhere this country has to go back to the idea that if you have a great idea, you have to figure out a way to pay for it and not impose the cost on other people. If your idea got a good idea, fine, pay for it. Don't, can't pay for it. Mm, now what? It's not moral to force people to pay to support an art museum that don't even live in that district or in that community. It's immoral. It's amoral. It's just taken for granted that it's a democracy. If we vote for it, we can make it happen. But it's immoral.
Well, Al, here's the catch on that one. They said it's free. But oh yeah, we forgot to tell you, when there's a show, you have to pay. Okay, so they don't want the blue-collar type showing up for the shows. The cheese and cracker wine type shows that they have, the elitists still want to, you know, have their own little private parties there when they bring in a special exhibit. And then
so they don't
want
the great unwashed to show up.
Right, you got it. And so now they have the same thing with the zoo. This guy with a phony PhD from Israel, and they never fired him. He didn't have a PhD. He's running the zoo. Okay, now I'm paying for the zoo, the Detroit Zoo. I get two Fridays out of the year that I get to go there free as a senior. Big deal. Now they're building a $35 million Pelican house. Now, you got people that can't pay their electric bills. Now, just not only the building of this Pelican house, but you know what it costs to maintain a refrigerated Pelican house? Do we have to have this? Or Penguin house. I'm sorry. It's a Penguin house. So,
Penguin.
You know, it just, it's one failed thing after another, and, you know, they just shove it on the little guy.
But one of the things about it is this. Are we seeing Detroit only as an isolated event, or is Detroit, is it an example of what is likely to come through much of the balance of the United States in the near future?
What's the
how long before the other cities, Washington, New York, Chicago, New York City, how long before they need assistance to pay their water bills or their rent bills or whatever? And I mean, really,
yeah,
they have rent control already. Somebody pay my bill. Will somebody please pay my bill? I need to go buy some lottery tickets. I can't afford my own water supplies. Some of this, you know, it's not just mathematics. It's not just economics. It's morality. And we've got to restore our mindset in the American people where you've got to pay your own bills. And I know that people that need charity, I get that. Not everyone will be able to do that. But we cannot take it as an entitlement.
They've done a good job of it. And like I say, I moved out of Detroit, and now I'm still paying for it.
Yeah, I understand. They're going to track you. It's like being a U.S. person. If you go overseas, the IRS will track you, and knowing that you're a Detroit person,
they're going to have a Detroit surcharge
is going to be tracking you. If you're making any money in a foreign country, Detroit is going to want its cut. Not just
Al, they're going to have a Detroit surcharge on my burial. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous what they now they had the Ford fireworks yesterday, right? They had the lowest attendance ever because there was gang fighting earlier with the GM Riverfront Walk the day before, so they had to close that down. And there was threats that there was going to be the game of knockout punch on everybody down there. So a lot of people just didn't show up. They said, well, I'll watch it on TV. I'm not going down to Detroit. You know, my bulletproof vest is in the cleaners this week, and it's just a shame.
Again, keep harping on the same theme. What is the knockout game except evidence of an immoral people?
Yeah.
A game where you punch people for no reason. Knock them out. See if you can knock them out. Yeah, let's do that. It's evidence of a moral collapse. And the people who engage in that game, where do you think they're going? The communities that engage in that game, they are destined for an economic collapse. And they won't make the connection between the fact that they're playing the knockout game and the fact that they're living in poverty, but the two of them are going to be connected. You want to play the knockout game? Good. Play it. But plan on living in poverty. Plan on raising your children in poverty. Plan on being ignorant, illiterate, and unable to compete in a modern technological society. But go play the knockout.
Remember, Al, when they ran that ad, come on back to Jamaica the way it used to be, because they were kidnapping and beating up tourists and people being killed, and the governor told the people of Jamaica, hey, look, we got to get our act together here or we're all going to starve because we need the tourists.
Yeah.
And I guess they kind of straightened up their act, but they got to do the same thing in Detroit.
But who's going to give them the word? Who's going to tell them you got to start paying your own bills? Who is in Detroit who can tell the people of Detroit that they need to start paying their own bills and expect that he can maintain his public office?
Yeah, I mean, well, they see they're worried about number one is re-election. Okay, they don't worry about doing the right thing the 4 years they're in. It's getting re-elected.
So no one's going to break the news to the people of Detroit. They have to pay their own bills. No one's going to do that unless they're listening to a program like this one broadcast out of Texas or something. And I don't expect that there's going to be too many people in Detroit that are listening per se. They're not going to get, which means this problem will continue to fester until finally the city just absolutely collapses. If it hasn't been collapsed already, it's going to get worse unless they can find new people to pay their bills. Or they adopt the mindset where they say, we'll pay our own bills.
Firemen and cops, they paid into their own pension. Their pension was fully funded by their own pay, and now they're stealing from their pension to keep the city going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame, too. Now, what guy wants to be a fireman? One fireman fell through two stories in a house, and they said, well, we got to take you to the hospital. He said, no, you can't take me because the fire department didn't pay my last bill while I went to the hospital. So I'm just fine. Leave me alone. Now, isn't that pathetic when a fireman injured on the job is afraid to go to the hospital because the city's not going to pay his bill?
Again, you know, this isn't just mathematics. It's morality. And if we don't get this country back on a moral track, I believe, I'm trying to remember who made the statement. I'll bet you've heard this before. One of the founding fathers, might have been Franklin, might have been Madison. I don't remember who made the statement. They said, what kind of constitution have you given us? He said, we've given you a republic. And they went on and say that this constitution is only suitable for a moral people. This form of government will only work for the moral people, and if we're not moral, the whole thing's going to blow up on our face. That's what we're looking at right now. That's what we're seeing in Detroit. And everyone is confused and hurt and whatever, and the solution to the problem will take years, you know, to implement that solution, but the solution is you've got to become a moral people.
Oh, right, one last thing, Al. They say that they cannot get... They can't get African-American graduates from college to teach in Detroit school system, so it's mostly white teachers. But 75% of all black college graduates get a job with the government, and that's another welfare program.
Yeah, I understand. Well,
you're having a good time.
Most government work is just welfare. It's not really making a productive contribution. It is a glorified form of welfare. You have to go to the job, but it's still largely welfare. Dave, we've got to thank you for your call.
Okay.
We're out of time.
Take care. All right.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Talk to you another time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Dave, who just called in. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.